Our next speaker is Krista Hood. She's a hydrologist at the Wisconsin Water Science Center in Middleton, Wisconsin. She started working at the USGS when she was a student there, and now she works in water quality. She's turned her focus to high-frequency water quality monitoring. Some of her other project work includes database management, statistical analysis of soil and water chemistry data, and hydrologic data analysis. So with that, please welcome Krista.
Hello. Hope everybody is refreshed from the break, and thanks, Ellen, for inviting me to speak today. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about a project I've been working on where we are looking at water quality data trends using high-frequency data analysis. Nitrate is the most widespread contaminant in groundwater in Wisconsin. 10% of private wells that have been tested exceed the drinking water standard. And if you move to more intense agricultural areas, then that is more like 20 to 30%. 43 municipal wells in the state exceed the drinking water standard for nitrate. That is up from just 19 wells in 1999. $32 million are spent by municipalities to remove nitrate from water in Wisconsin. If you take a look at this map that I'm showing, you can see the percentage of exceedances of nitrate distributed through the state of Wisconsin. And as you can see, it is a widespread occurrence in Wisconsin. Nitrate in the groundwater has become a political issue, which I know that you are all familiar with in Minnesota. So I also pulled up this map of Minnesota showing the dark blue dots, which are the private wells that exceed the nitrate standard. This is from the Minnesota Department of Health. I'm sure you've seen this before, or some of you have even helped create this map. But so nitrate and groundwater in Wisconsin is a shared problem in Minnesota and Wisconsin. There was some research done in the early 90s by Shaw that contributed, that estimated about 90% of nitrate in groundwater is sourced from agriculture. So nutrient is an essential plant mineral, and producers rely on adding nitrogen fertilizers to their soil to maximize their crop yields. This is a graph showing fertilizer usage, annual fertilizer usage in Wisconsin. It starts at about 1979 and goes through 2016. And as you can see, there is an increasing trend in fertilizer usage in Wisconsin. Agriculture will continue to be a vital part of Wisconsin's economy well into the future, and therefore nitrate will continue to be a constituent of concern in groundwater. Today, I am going to go over the USGS's National Water Quality Assessment Program and what they have been doing to assess drinking or water quality trends in aquifers across the country. The objective of the National Water Quality Assessment Program is to describe water quality status and trends to improve our understanding of natural and anthropogenic factors affecting water quality conditions in our nation's aquifers. So starting at the top, and the largest scale projects that we work on are the decadal networks. The decadal networks are used to characterize the water quality in our nation's aquifers. Stepping down a bit are the flow system studies. Flow system studies, the objective is to characterize source water and fate and transport of contaminants through a more local flow path of an aquifer. And then the Enhanced Trends Network, or the ETN networks, which is what I'm currently working on, and that is taking a smaller subset of wells and collecting high-frequency data in order to assess variability and short-term trends in those wells. So the decadal networks began in cycle one of NACWA, which started in 1988 and ran through 2002. During cycle one, 5,000 wells as part of the decadal networks were sampled. In cycle two, which ran from 2002 to 2012, 1,500 of those sites were resampled in an effort to characterize trends in water quality in those aquifers. Decadal Trends networks usually consist of about 30 wells, and they can be public supply wells, domestic wells, or monitoring wells, depending on the need. And they are grouped in such a way so that they represent aquifers that are important to public drinking water supplies or shallow aquifers that are affected by land use, either agriculture or urban. These well networks are sampled decadally, and the analyte list for those samples is wide, and it includes nutrients, ions, trace metals, organics, bacteria, and also age tracing compounds in order to estimate recharge age. At the map at the top of the United States, the blue dots represent the resampled networks in the second cycle, and you can see that they do encompass a lot of the areas across the nation. The map down below is a map of Wisconsin, and the area outlined in red is the land use network, which was a shallow glacial aquifer system surrounded by intense agricultural production. That is the network that I'm going to focus on for now. So a lot of the results from the Cycle 1, Cycle 2 program can be found in multiple publications and online. This is one of the interesting tools that came out of those analysis, and this is called the Decadal Trends Mapper. I included the URL at the bottom if you want to check it out. But one of the interesting things about the mapper is that you can look at a single constituent and see how it trended from cycle one to cycle two across the nation in these decadal aquifers. The symbols on the big map represent the direction of the trend and the magnitude of the trend, and the dark circles indicate that there wasn't any significant increase or decrease in concentrations. So the map that is showing is the map for nitrate, and you can see, you can see this big red upward pointing arrow on the state of Wisconsin, and that is for the land use network, and that just indicates that there was a significant increase in nitrate concentrations from cycle one to cycle two. On this inset map is the close-up of the land use network, and all those symbols represent one of our sites. The symbols signify both the direction of the trend and the magnitude of the trend. So basically, the data from cycle one was compared to the data from cycle two in a pairwise analysis, and this just indicates that trend. So you can see there's both increases and decrease in nitrate concentration throughout the Lus Ag network, but overall it was a significant increasing trend in nitrate concentrations. So to simplify the results that came out of that study a little bit, you see increasing trends in nitrate in the land use network, and we also know that nitrogen fertilizer use has increased over that time period. Generally, they're using land use as a significant factor for water quality in that network. So now I'm going to move on to the flow system study. The flow system study's objectives were to characterize source water and fate and transport of contaminants throughout a more local scale. So on the map, you can see the red outline, which was the land use network. And the flow system study is actually where that red dot is within the land use network. The Wisconsin Flow System Study, their objective was to see what the agricultural effects on groundwater quality throughout the aquifer were and at a local scale. The Flow System Study was made up of four sets of nested wells of varying depths from water table wells to down near the bottom of the unconsolidated aquifer. And there was just a single sample taken at those wells for this study, but there was a wide range of analytes, including nutrients, ions, all those other ones I mentioned before, and also including the age tracers so that groundwater recharge age could be estimated. This is an overview of the flow system study. The yellow line indicates the direction of the flow from northwest to southeast. At the base of the arrow is the Tomorrow River. All of or most of the water from the flow system discharges into the Tamar River. Most of the recharge in the area is either precipitation or irrigation. And the picture on the right is just a picture of the typical land use in the area, mostly corn production and row crops. And there is a small amount of forested area right at the top of the gradient. The cross-section picture here is the cross-section of the flow system. You can see the arrows indicate the direction of the flow. Right here, you can see where most of the flow discharges into the Tamar River, and a small part of the deepest part of the flow bypasses that Tamar River. You can also see here the locations of the well networks, and the horizontal lines indicate where the depths of the nested wells are. This unconsolidated glacial aquifer is overlain by about 5 to 15 meters of an unsaturated zone, and it is underlain by a Precambrian crystalline bedrock that restricts downward flow. So one of the most useful tools in this study was estimating recharge age using those age tracers. So since this study just involved a single sample at all those wells, when they were estimating recharge age, they were then able to correlate those recharge ages with temporally variable metrics such as historical chemical use and historical climate data. So this graph represents how they did that. The pink line is nitrogen fertilizer use in the state of Wisconsin on an annual basis, and you can see that increasing trend I was talking about earlier. And then the green dots represent nitrate concentrations for the flow system study wells adjusted for their recharge age. So you can see that some of the older recharge age samples have much lower nitrate concentrations than some of the newer recharge age samples. And that actually follows the nitrogen fertilizer use trend pretty closely. So some of the conclusions from the flow system study were a better understanding of source water and the overall quality of the water on this small-scale flow system. We did conclude chemical inputs to the land surface don't uniformly affect concentrations throughout the aquifer. And we used age tracers to help us establish correlations with historical chemical use and historical climate data. And one of the inferred things from this study was that in those deeper, older recharged samples, we would likely see increases in nitrate as nitrate penetrated the aquifer deeper and further away from the source area. So now I'm going to talk a little bit about what we're currently working on with the Enhanced Trends Network. The Enhanced Trends Network was created out of a need to know what kind of short-term variability and trends we cannot see by just looking at those decadal network samples. We're using high-frequency data at wells to observe those trends and variability. High-frequency data collections, not new to the USGS, as you could see by the Little Plover River movie earlier. A lot of our surface water studies are driven by that high-frequency data, whether it's discharge or other water quality parameters. Some of the questions that we had going into our ETN sites was, what is the temporal variability of nitrate immediately down gradient from agriculture? What is the time frame for response that you might see? What are the groundwater quality trends that result from changes in current land use changes? And what are other factors cause short-term variability in trends? So again, this is the same map I've used previously, but it's this shows the location of the Enhanced Trends Network sites. The land use network is in the red outline, and then the most northern site is also the site of our flow system study, but it's also the site of the Tamar River ETN sites, where we took two of those flow system wells and equipped them with monitoring equipment. There's two monitoring wells. One is a water table well at 35 feet. The other one is a deep well at 83 feet. The point in the southwest part of Wisconsin is Spring Green, Wisconsin. And there we have one public supply well that is 125 feet and one monitoring well that is 50 feet deep. So all four of these wells are located in the glacial unconsolidated aquifer, which I didn't mention before, but it consists mostly of sand and gravel and has a high infiltration rate. So the monitoring equipment that we have installed at these sites are an aquatrol, which measures water level and temperature on an hourly basis. That is installed downhole at the wells, at the monitoring wells. We have a YSI EXO, measuring specific conductance, pH, and dissolved oxygen. It takes measurements twice a day after a purge. That is deployed ex situ, so it's inside the well house. And we also have Suna optical nitrate sensors at the Tamara River site that also takes measurements twice daily after a purge and is ex situ in the well house. In addition to the high-frequency data collection, we are taking discrete samples. We have taken annual samples from 2014 to the present, or to about 2017, and then we just recently started taking bi-monthly samples, and we will continue to do that through 2022. So this is the ETN site at the Tamara River. The picture on the left is familiar. It's the one from the flow path study. The two wells that we have instrumented are located at the third set of nested wells right here. And this is the picture on the right is a picture inside the well house. We have the two well casings sticking up from the bottom, a YSI that is mounted on the wall of the well house. And this picture was taken before the Suna was installed, but that sits right here on the ground in a homemade flow-through chamber that contains the Suna. And we also do have hardwired electrical at both of our monitoring well sites, which is important to keep the wells running or the sites operating during the wintertime because we're able to plug in space heaters and prevent things from freezing up. So one of the metrics we wanted to look at that might result in some short-term variability at the sites was climate variability. And for that, we looked at the Palmer Drought Severity Index. The Palmer Drought Severity Index is a measure of wetness or drought at an area based on precipitation and moisture supply and demand. So the period of record for the ETN site starts at about late 2014 here. So as you can see, it's basically been wet the entire time those instruments have been deployed. So this is a look at the water level data from the Tamara River shallow well. And just as a reminder, that's the 35-foot water table well that we have at the Tamara River site. You can see here the water level data is the darker line here, and you can see that there is a pretty good relationship with climate. This is the water quality time series from the shallow well at the Tamara River. The top line, top turquoise line, is specific conductance. There is quite a bit of variability in that time series, and you can even see a general trending upward of specific conductance at that well. The pink line here is water temperature, which you can see a strong seasonal signal. pH is the green line at the bottom. There's not really much variability to speak of in that parameter. And then the red line is dissolved oxygen. And you see quite a bit of variability in that parameter, but there's really no discernible trend there. So this, I wanted to show the nitrate data. So the green line is the nitrate data. Which in the shallow well is incredibly variable. It ranges from about 11 down to below 6 in just over the period of record, which is a couple of years. So there's quite a bit of variability in nitrate. And I threw it on this graph to see if there were relationships between variability and specific conductance and dissolved oxygen. And there does not appear to be any clear relationship between those parameters. And this is look at water level, which is the top black line, specific conductance, which is the turquoise line, and nitrate, again, which is the red line, just to see if there was any relationships with water level. And it doesn't really seem like there's a clear relationship with the water level, but it might be contributing to some of the variability with these parameters. So now we're going to talk a little bit about the data from the deep well at Tamara River. The deep well is an 83-foot monitoring well. The dark black line is water level, looking at it with the Palmer Drought Severity Index data. Again, you can see a pretty strong relationship with climate variability and the water level data. This is the time series for the water quality parameters. Again, with water temperature, which is the pink line, you can see that strong seasonal signal. But for pH and DO, which are the green and red lines, there isn't much variability in the deep well. And when you look at specific conductance, which is the turquoise line at the top, there is variability, but there does not seem to be any discernible trend with that data. And again, just to show off the nitrate data is the green line at the bottom. Very little variability in nitrate at the deep well. It ranges from about 2.4 to 2.8 over the period of record, which kind of goes in line with the rest of the water quality parameters at that site. So now I'll talk a little bit about the ETN site and the data from the Spring Green wells. We chose the Spring Green wells because we were working with the Wisconsin Nitrate Initiative, that is a program developed by the DNR, where they are looking at communities with historically high nitrate values in their public supply wells and working with producers in the area to try to implement management practices to help reduce nitrate in the groundwater. The picture on the left is the public supply well, which has historically had high nitrate values. And as you can see in this picture, we just have this YSI XO at this site. We don't have a Suna or an Aquatrol. And the monitoring well is here. It's basically in the middle of a field of mowed grass. And the setup on the inside is very similar to the Tamara River site. Both of those sites are located within the city, or town, I guess, of Spring Green, which is a pretty small town surrounded by agriculture in the southwest part of the state. This is an overview of Spring Green, the top point being the monitoring well, the bottom point being the public supply well, and these yellow lines indicate generalized flow of groundwater in the area, going from north to south and discharging in the Wisconsin River. Recharge in this area, again, is mostly precipitation and irrigated water. So this is a look at the climate variability for the southwest part of the state. The Palmer Drought Severity Index, again, that's what we're looking at. You can see here in mid to late 2015 is kind of where when we installed those wells, and you can see it starts off in a bit of a drought period, but then it's wet for the remainder of the period of record. And again, comparing water level data from the Spring Green monitoring well, which just as a reminder, that's the 50-foot monitoring well in the area. And you can see a pretty good relationship again with climate variability in that water level data. Taking a look at the water quality time series data, you do not see really any variability in pH, this middle green line here. In water temperature, that seasonal signature that we were seeing at the Tamara River site is diminished quite a bit. You can almost not see it at all. But there is quite a bit of variability in both specific conductance, which is the turquoise line, and DO, which is the red line at the bottom. And interestingly enough, you kind of see an inverse relationship where specific conductance goes up, but DO is dropping down here and here and here and here. Whether or not that's a seasonal pattern, it's certainly possible because it seems to happen in late summer, early fall, but we're still not sure what could be causing that. And then this is just a look at those two water quality parameters with water level to see if there was any relationship with those between those parameters, and there just doesn't really seem to be a strong relationship. This is the data for the public supply well. These are the only three parameters we really collect at that site. Dissolved oxygen is the red line at the bottom. A little bit of variability and a little bit of a possible increasing trend, but I think there's probably not enough data to really know for sure. pH is the green line, which doesn't have much variability at all. And then specific conductance at the top, that has a decent amount of variability, but there's really no discernible trend. You see these two peaks here, which do correlate to roughly late fall, but there isn't a peak for late 2016. So not sure again what could be causing that. And just because we don't have water level at this site, I threw up specific conductance versus the climate variability to see if there was any relationship there, and there does not seem to be one, which isn't really a surprise. So the future directions for this project, like I kind of mentioned earlier, we are continuing high frequency data collection and discrete data collection through 2022. We are hoping to get a nitrate sensor installed at either or both of the Spring Green wells. We are working with the DNR to do that. And to dig deeper using stable isotope data, I'd like to see if there are seasonal variabilities in source water contributions, and use age tracer data like we did in the flow path study to maybe correlate some of that time series data with historical climate data or land use data. So one of the main goals coming out of this study was to design better groundwater studies, tailor the data collection that we're doing to the environmental setting or the goals of the project. And with all this data that we're collecting, maybe we could potentially model occurrences of drinking water exceedances in high susceptibility areas. And investigate further how management practices can influence water quality in the long and the short term. Are there any questions if we're doing that?
As that were near the Tomorrow River, how close were they to an irrigation well?
They're pretty close. The third set of nested wells where we have the ETN well set up, they're easily 100 yards from the nearest irrigation line. Irrigation well.
Okay.
Yes, and that's one of the things I want to do with the stable isotope data is to see if during the drier summer periods when they are using irrigation, does that affect the flow path and what we're seeing in either the deep or the shallow wells.
I have a question over here about the fertilizer use data you're using in the first part of your presentation.
Yeah.
We see similar trends in Minnesota, but one of the other trends we're also seeing are an increase in total acreage and also an increase in nitrogen use efficiency. Do you have any sense of if in Minnesota we see that, as fertilizer use is increasing, we're also seeing a greater nitrogen use efficiency, so perhaps more of that's being removed. Do you have any sense of what that data is like in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, I'm sure I have to believe people are looking at that, but I did not look at that before I did this presentation. But that's a good point. I mean, increasing acreage of especially the high nitrogen feeders like corn and potatoes, which are really important crops in Wisconsin, I'm sure that's an increasing number.
Thank you.
Yep.
You had quite a number of charts with specific conductance. Do you have some speculation or what are the components contributing to the elevated specific conductance?
Yeah, so I think going into this, we really thought nitrate was going to be one of the main components when we saw changes in specific conductance. But if you look, especially in that shallow Tomorrow River graph where we were collecting continuous or high-frequency nitrate data, it doesn't seem to have a strong, or it's not the only thing affecting specific conductance. Like, it's not a one-to-one comparison there. So in addition, it could be some kind of combination of dry, wet periods where, cations or anions are accumulating on the soil surface, and then heavy rainfall events are washing those through the aquifer. Something, it could be something like that. But no, I don't have specific ideas otherwise.